Okay, agenda paper 14 deals with a new submission. The issue is which exchange rate should be used to translate revenue when an entity enters into a foreign currency sales contract and receives a non-refundable cash payment in advance of delivery of the goods or services. So we're back into IFRS 15 territory again. The guidance in IS 21 is that you use the exchange rate at the date the transaction first qualifies for recognition in accordance with IFRS. The submitter has identified three different views. View A is to translate revenue using the spot rate at the date you enter into an enforceable contract, or the enforceable or the contract becomes enforceable, whether or not you record that contract in the financial statements at that date. And this is on the basis that the right to receive the cash and the obligation to deliver the goods or services is established at this date. View B is to recognise revenue using the exchange rate that the advance payment is received, or if you're in IFRS 15, it might be the date the cash payment falls due with earlier. And this is also the date that the deferred revenue is recognised, your contract liability is recognised in the financial statements. We note that in accordance with this fact pattern, the advance payment is non-refundable, and therefore the deferred revenue is treated as a non-monetary item and therefore is not retranslated. And I think the principle behind view B is that the first recognition of the transaction is when either of the parties to the contract first performs, and it's when the standards tell you to recognise that. Under view C, you would recognise the revenue using the exchange rate at the date the revenue is recognised, that is, when the goods or services are delivered. In this case, the difference between the amount of the deferred revenue, which is recognised using the exchange rate at the date of the cash prepayment, and the amount of revenue you're recognising in the income statement, which is using the exchange rate at the date of the transfer of the goods or services, would be recognised as a foreign exchange gain or loss at the point in time in which you're recognising the related revenue. And this view treats delivering the goods or services as the transaction under IAS 21 in its own right. Our outreach has indicated that the issue is particularly common in the construction industry and that practice is mixed. In practice, revenue is recognised both using both view B, the rate at the date of the advance cash receipt, and view C, the rate at the date of the revenue recognition. And this is largely expected to continue on adoption of IFRS 15, although obviously people are still working out where they are with IFRS 15, so potentially a bit of caution there. We also raised the issue with the Global Preparers Forum last week, and their experiences were similar. Many of them have experience of similar sales contracts. Practice was mixed, although most used view C using the date at the recognition of the revenue and preferred that view, and there were a few who had experienced view B using the date at the exchange rate at the date of the prepayment. And some pointed out that in their view C using the date at the rate of revenue was simpler from a systems perspective. In our analysis, we concluded that we didn't think IS 21 was entirely clear on whether the revenue should be recognised using the exchange rate at the date of the advance payment or the date of recognition of the revenue. As noted in paragraph 59 of the agenda paper, some of the staff think that view B is more appropriate interpretation of IS 21, and this is because we feel that it reflects the economics of the situation, which is that the entity is no longer exposed to foreign exchange risk once you've received the cash. You can then decide, but it's a treasury operation as to what you do with the cash at that point. In addition, we also feel it reflects the inherent interdependence of the obligation to transfer the goods or services on recognition of the deferred revenue and the subsequent transfer of those goods and services, which gives rise to the recognition of the revenue. Given the outreach results and the lack of clarity in IS 21, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee add this issue to your agenda with a view to developing an interpretation. So the questions for you are, do you agree with the staff technical analysis as summarised in paragraphs 57 to 59 in the agenda paper, and also the recommendation to add the issue to the agenda?
Martin?
I agree with the staff
that it's necessary to put the topic on the agenda, because currently it is not that clear. Personally, I have a clear view. This is view B, because economically, at this point in time, then the foreign currency is under the control of the entity, and the entity might decide whether it still has some currency exposure on it or not, thus directly exchanging it into its functional currency or not. So economically, there is no additional risk involved. As far as I know, companies, or it would be more challenging for companies to apply view C, and in general, that is also not in line with, well, steering the company. But that could be an issue for further outreach. I have an additional issue and question in the area surround it. Imagine in future we have to give information about open performance obligation. Now imagine that these open performance obligations are potentially also in a different foreign currency or so. Might I have similar issues in terms of what exchange rate I have to apply, probably if I do my performance then in the year, don't know what, in 2 or 3 years time ahead, do I have to apply a forward exchange rate, or these questions are not yet asked, but I guess when we start here, this could also be a topic, and I I would argue for the spot rate.
Got a lot of people who want to come in on this one. I'm going to start with Mikkel and just work our way around.
I would say that we talk about recognizing, we say, revenue now then, but I mean, in the end, there will always be the same amount in the profit and loss, and that will be the paid amount, the alternative B. So, to my understanding, then, if you look on the IS1 and the profit and loss statement, it is not discussed then where you should put the exchange rates differences. So if you would not put it in revenue, then of course it's a question, where do you put it elsewhere? That I think we need to discuss then. And then for sure I agree with view B, that is what we should end up with. But it is also discussed here if we should go through a currency translation account or not. And I would say that in practice, it has to go through this account. So you need to see, okay, how can you get these accounts to the right row in the income statement in a logical way? And if you talk about revenue, then it potentially could be allocated correctly in all the transaction flows. But if you talk about the cost side, if you say that you should have the effects on each line in a functional functional profit and loss statement, that will not work, so to speak. That will be extremely difficult to see how to allocate the correct effects to the right line there. So I think it's a matter of practice, but I mean, in the end, it the only result that can be is, of course, the one that is paid. Then if you gross up or you do it net or so, but so I still argue for B then.
John?
I agree with the staff recommendation. I think there is diversity in practice. I also agree with the technical analysis. I think view B is the more supportable approach. I think there is only one transaction, and under paragraph 22 of IAS 21, when that transaction is initially recognised, that's the point. That's when you apply the foreign exchange translation. I don't think there's multiple. I don't think there are two separate transactions. I think if there were, there would be non-exchange transactions. Somebody donating someone goods, and then you're donating me cash. To me, there's only one transaction. Transaction means two parties exchanging. So I think view B is the appropriate technical interpretation. I think it does raise, this question does raise lots of issues, though, also with IFRS 15 and how it actually, the idea of translation works in an IFRS 15 environment where you have to determine the transaction price under the contract. Is that actually transaction price determined in the foreign currency? And is that then adjusted when the transaction is first recognized when one of the parties performs? So I think there's a lot of flow-on issues from this into IFRS 15 that maybe the TRG could pick up.
Yes?
Yes. I agree with the staff analysis and the recommendation. And I think the more I read through, and then I can understand the logic that the views will be. But from, as you said, that the GPF, I think from practical perspective, I think VUC would be the dominant practice. So thinking about that, I'm just not so convinced that the one transaction or two transactions, as you said, that robust logic behind this. I think we might need to come back and then clarify would be a good for us to proceed.
Bruce?
My things are a bit conflicted on this, and I'll tell you why. Firstly, I agree that this is definitely an area of diversity, so I've seen it firsthand, so this is definitely something we do need to address. My only comment on the difference between really VUB and VUC was that, and it comes down to what Kaz was saying around the one transaction, because I can plausibly see that there are different reasons why you'd make that prepayment. And one of them could be as a foreign currency issue. So I could very much decide I'm going to make a payment now as a hedge in terms of I'm worried about currency, so I do it from that point of view. And if I'm doing it as a hedging transaction, well, we know that IFRS treats these differently. When you're doing something as a hedging transaction, you do treat it separately to that. The second thing, obviously, is that IFRS 15 has got that concept that we recognize revenue when we satisfy the performance obligation. My concern is if I'm satisfying the performance obligation later and recognizing revenue then, now I'm measuring the revenue a lot earlier just because I've made the prepayment, whereas if I've made the payment afterwards, I'd get a different answer. I'm not convinced that, in my mind, yet. I don't think we've made the leap that we should have revenue recognition under IFRS 15. We've then got the issue of foreign currency under IAS 21. Are we bundling all those together, or do I think we've got a revenue recognition transaction and we've got forex differences between them? So I'm not saying I disagree with B or C. I'm saying I'm somewhere between the two at the moment. UD.
All right.
I think that it is important that the staff analyzes whether a payment in foreign currency is variable consideration under IFRS 15, which may drive you to a certain type of accounting if it is concluded. So I support this issue to be looked at by the revenue TRG. I would also like, well, if it is UB that is being followed, I would also like to understand how this would apply for companies operating in long-term contracts, applying percentage of completion method when you have down payments at certain stages, if they are in foreign currency. I'm not so sure how the whole thing would apply then, because I understand that in these type of industries, you count for revenue as it progresses using the rate as performance is being carried out, unless you have some hedges and so on. But indeed, the staff need to look at those issues and spend more time.
Yeah, we did consider the variable consideration point in IFRS 15, and when we looked at how it's defined on what variable consideration, it talks about rebates, volume rebates and things that are similar to that. And so we felt that foreign exchange movements weren't in the nature of variable consideration, but obviously we can take another look at that again.
Well, you receive a variable amount of cash for the performance you deliver, or the goods you sell, or the performance the services you deliver.
Tony?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the staff analysis. I think this question, and I think Laurence and John have both said it, raises a wide range of interesting questions in connection with IFRS 15. And I think there's a question mark if staff's going to take, if we're going to take something on, is this the right group to be talking about IFRS 15 issues while the TRG is talking about issues and the board is considering whether it's going to react to things that the TRG says? So I think there's a, I think we perhaps need to think carefully about where the analysis goes next. I mean, I think there's a relatively simple, maybe deceptively simple, IAS 21 question, which is deferred revenue or a contract liability a monetary item? I think we've all said the same thing. No, it's not a monetary item, but it's never going to be settled in cash. So that, while there's diversity in practice today, that piece could be addressed, I think, quite simply. There are then a range of issues that John and Laurence have mentioned that arise under IFRS 15. And I'm not sure at the moment that should be coming to the Interpretations Committee without the board thinking about whether that's a discussion that ought to happen at the TRG.
Well, I am sure that it should go to the TRG. I think that's the sequencing that I understood was in place. Now, when I say it or they, I don't see any problem with our staff harvesting them.
Absolutely not.
And articulating them as a consequence of dealing with this issue. And to say to the TRG, you know, we found this on our doorstep, and by the way, here are all the side issues. I think that's absolutely appropriate for us to do. But to the extent that it's an IFRS 15 issue, I think if nothing else, just respect for not having everybody do things at the same time, they ought to go to the TRG first. Andrew?
I was a bit surprised by the amount of diversity that evidently is in practice on this issue. I thought in principle, in the, if you like, the simplified scenario where you get paid in foreign currency now and you're going to deliver something in 3 months' time, I thought view B is clearly the right answer, and view C is just tantamount to retranslating a non-monetary item under IAS 21, got there by a different, joining the dots in a different way. I think in the construction sector, I think in practice, it can be an operational challenge, as I think Laurence alluded to, where you're moving from perhaps contract asset to contract liability, recognising revenue continuously, receiving a series of payments, so which month's revenue relates to which particular payment is, and then a strict view B approach could mean you have to flip from that month's particular spot rate to some previous rate when you received a payment, and overlay that with variable consideration and that kind of thing. I think it's an operational issue rather than diversity around the principle, but your average does identify diversity. Just on the TRG, we should render under the TRG what belongs to the TRG, absolutely. I do think on the question of is this variable consideration, I really hope the TRG says no, because I've no idea how you're going to apply a revenue constraint, for example, if you've got foreign currency exposure. That's going to be completely non-operational.
Martin, do you also have a biblical allusion for us?
No, but more or less I had the same question on the formal process of the TRG. I mean, we are probably aware that we find no real hardcore sentence in the accounting standards. In either way, it would be a kind of, say, interpretation of IFRS 15. So sooner or later, it might come back to us. My question, the procedure would be then, would it be more or less the duty of the TRG to come with a suggestion and we decide then on an interpretation? Because as far as I understood, all publications of the TRG are not binding. So there's a direct link towards the board or so. More or less this formal process, I'm not...
I will... allude to board members and to my colleagues here, but I thought that the TRG was the first stop.
Yeah, and again, what they say and what they do is not binding, but they might actually identify that there's a problem that needs to be addressed and refer it on to the board or back into here. But you're right, Martin, the actual words they come out with are not binding in itself. They're not going to sit there and say, ah, this is the answer. They'd say, yes, there's merit in this, and perhaps it should be have it looked at. So it's hard to tell, but yeah.
I would have thought the process would be that we'd flag it for the TRG to think about. If they discuss it, then they sort of give feedback to the board. The board then might decide it should come for interpretation or something else or nothing. And if the TRG decided that for some reason they didn't want to address it, then maybe it would come back as something potentially for this group again. But I would have thought the first offer, at least for consideration, would be naturally the TRG. And then it has the benefit too that if something does get done, it's a joint discussion rather than risking diverging on this issue.
Martin, and then Alan wants to come in.
So the TRG also have this opportunity to do this outreach and everything what we could decide on. They could also decide to have a worldwide outreach and so on.
I don't.
Is this in the toolbox of the TRG?
No. Alan.
I don't think they would do that. They would simply say if they thought there was something with merit, they might ask the boards to have a look and do something. But I was just going to say, I think it's a fascinating issue to me, because when I was looking at the papers as they were being put together, the interaction is kind of interesting, because I don't think it's easy to interpret IS-21 by itself, although I'm just going to contradict myself. What the issue here is IS-21 says it's the date of the transaction. The question is, what is the transaction? And you have a look. You could actually argue that you could clarify IS-21 and talk about the transactions, the date in which you initially recognise the revenue, and then you just leave 15 to work out. I actually think there's quite a bit of guidance in 15 now, far more than we have in IS-11 and 18, because it talks about, you know, you might get a deposit, for example, that's wholly unperformed. There's an argument that at the point at which it begins to be performed is really the date in which you establish the transaction price, and essentially that's the transaction. From then on, you're okay. So it's a question of whether or not we're trying to interpret when a transaction takes place, or whether we're trying to clarify that the transaction we're interested in is the revenue recognition one. And I should have warned you, Tony, but I was fascinated reading the Ernst & Young handbooks. They have an example for, they have an example with that inventory.
It's really good.
It's a really an example of inventory, and you know, say you order it, it then gets shipped, and is it FOB or what? It gets shipped, it gets delivered, the invoice arrives, and you pay it. And they just talked through, and they said, depends. Is it FOB? In which case, maybe that's when the risks come on board. That might establish the transaction date. So the example that's in there was not about, was not trying to interpret 21, but was just trying to set out some of the facts and circumstances you might have to think about. So I think it's very hard, as I say, to interpret 21 without having a peek through the other standard, but establishing it's when the revenue is recognised initially might be the helpful thing you do at 21.
Okay, we've got a lot of IASB people who want to come in here, but I'll give John the right to defend his firm here before they do.
No, I wasn't going to speak about what's in our book, but I was just going to say, I think under IFRS 15, I mean, there's a totally different model towards the measurement of your revenue and the recognition. The measurement is based upon, you determine the transaction price, the consideration promised in the contract, and then you allocate it across the performance obligations, and then you recognize the revenue when those performance obligations are satisfied. So the measurement of revenue under IFRS 15 has nothing to do with the timing of the satisfaction of the performance obligations. So I think this question is even more pronounced under IFRS 15 than it is under IAS 18, where you could argue that the measurement is at the time of recognition, because it's the fair value of the consideration. You could argue that that's at the point of recognition, not at any other time. So but I think under IFRS 15, this is even a bigger issue.
Chung Wu, you wanted to come in?
No, I agree. I think, you know, rather than keep, I guess, you know, the submission came to the interpretation committee, so we better handle with this issue in this committee, by this committee, rather than giving us some kind of issue to the TRG. Because, you know, there might be an issue under the new different standard, but it seems to me it'll take a lot of time if you go there and after full discussion, deliberation there and coming back here. So it seems that the base principle is rather we should give us some kind of short, quick answer to this kind of question. If there's no big problem with the IFRS 15, then maybe the interpretation committee must play a big role as a your role to give us an answer rather than giving us a kind of other the organization. That's what I'm thinking.
Philippe?
To Martin's comment about the toolkit or toolbox, TRG members are expected to do some form of outreach with their own constituents. Not the TRG itself, but the members are expected to have some liaison with preparers, communities, or whoever they talk to, and to get some feedback from and come with some ideas. But
okay. Sandy, anything to add?
Going backwards if I said that economically I think it's VUA, but I mean I get how IFRS 15 because you don't recognize the transaction until you actually receive the cash. I was a little confused by the footnote in the submission, which was number 9, which basically said people recognize this gross, which is the only, you would only have that in VUA. So it seemingly was saying to me that we were going to have less situations where we would actually recognize it at the time that the contract was entered into, and more. And I get under IFRS 15 why we don't recognize executory contracts, but I guess I don't see VUC at all. And to me, economically speaking, you've locked in the foreign currency at T equals zero. So I think users of the financial statements see that you've entered into the contract and you've agreed upon a price, and between date A, date T equals zero in A and B, economically something's happened that never gets reflected in the financial statement.
Okay. Let me propose this.
Or I should say the income statement.
Yeah, point taken. My sense of the committee is that we should proceed on this one. That we need to keep the focus on 21. If issues arise about 15, we don't just leave them on the table. And I don't think Alan was anticipating that. We drop a note to the TRG. My sense is that the staff starting point in developing an interpretation, should be view B. Sandy was the only one that I heard support view A.
Because I get transaction is on that date. I'm just saying I've already accepted that IFRS 15 doesn't recognize the transaction on the date that it economically happened. I've accepted that. I'm just saying that if you read the submission, it seems to connote that there's a change between current practice and IFRS 15 a little bit. And no one uses VUA, which is surprising, because economically something happened there.
Okay, point taken. In any event, the staff starting point should be view B, and that will come back to us in due course.
And meanwhile, also just drop a note to the TRG to let them know about what we have already been discussing in terms of the interaction with 15.
We won't rely on Tony to get that done.
But only all allowed to submit papers.
Okay. Are we done, Hannah?
Lovely, thank you.
For the time being.